You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
You're listening to
Wrestling to the Max.
Alert, alert, clear all channels.
This is an exclusive.
How you like that?
Gary Vaughn, Sean Garmer, and Paul Leeser.
Hello and welcome to an unexpected Wrestling the Max Extra here, as we are right after the WWE Cruiserweight Classic finals that just ended. Big announcement as well right before the finals went on. It was a rumor that we kind of already heard a bunch of times, but never had totally been confirmed until it happened right before the final. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Of course, I am your host for this evening, Sean Garmer, and with me, Wrestling Unwrapped's Patrick Kitta.
How are you, Sean? It's been a mighty interesting night, so this should be an interesting discussion.
Yeah, it certainly has. We only had a four match card here, so it won't take very long to get through for you guys. But, you kind of knew going in, we'd heard a lot of talk about, okay, looks like Kota Ibushi and Zack Sabre Jr. still have some things to do. Ibushi is all about being Mr. Japan right now, apparently, after taking his little hiatus. And Zack Sabre Jr. says he has things that he still wants to accomplish, but he did move to Orlando, so perhaps he does see that in his future, just not right now. So we go into the first match, which is Grand Metalik, Masca Dorada for some from CMLL, and of course Zack Sabre Jr. This was just wall-to-wall action. Metalik basically comes out from the get-go going after Sabre Jr. They counter a bunch of holds. Metalik's doing his flying stuff. Sabre Jr.'s doing his crazy pins. And it's just, I think it was all about Metalik being able to keep up with Sabre Jr. as far as the holds go. And Metalik eventually gets that Metalik driver, and he wins to have the first shock offset, really, of the tournament. What do you think of the result and the match?
You know, I think going into this, even though they were the two that formally had not signed, but I think everyone going into this had almost the exact same final being Kota Ibushi. It now makes sense why that didn't happen with the announcement we'll talk about later. But as far as this one, I mean, I don't think you could get off to a faster start than what Grand Metalik and CSJ got off to tonight with Metalik essentially going and flying to the outside, legitimately within the first 45 seconds. And like as you said, you know, it's wall-to-wall action almost the entire way that I was almost afraid they were going to park the crowd out after the first match. I mean, thank God it was only a four-match card. If it was more, it probably would have burned the entire crowd out. But, yeah, this was a perfect way to start the show and a perfect way to start the final night of the tournament. And, yeah, I was very, very happy. I was surprised that Grand Metalik picked up the victory over Zack Sabre Jr., but I'm seeing that as a huge fan of Zack Sabre Jr. and not being super familiar with Grand Metalik. But I have absolutely no issue with the way this one ended up, and it was just a great victory for Grand Metalik.
Yeah, it's a big victory for him. I mean, he's really gotten to show a lot in this tournament and show people that might have only seen bits and pieces of him or not seen anything of him at all. If you saw his New Japan run that he recently did, he was kind of kept to early matches, you know, and he got the one junior title match with Kenny Omega when he was a junior champion, but he was kind of just relegated to that early match stuff, so you're not expecting him to go this far if that's all you've seen of him, and it's just, it's really crazy to go, man, this is the guy, along with the guy we'll talk about in our next match, that they've sort of built this thing around, and you think that, I mean, they're still looking for that big luchador to sort of replace what you got with Rey Mysterio. They didn't quite get it with Kalisto. It seems like you think that Metalik has a chance to sort of be that mass superstar. I mean, he is pretty young.
At this point, it's tough to say, you know, because, yeah, they've tried now multiple times to get the next Rey Mysterio. They tried the original Sin Cara, then they tried with Omega for Sin Cara. That didn't work. And then it seems like Kalisto is just, you know, just about there to possibly be in that spot. And then he ends up injured. So that kind of ended up failing. I think Kalisto still could be the person. And if not, I mean, Grand Metalik could be the next person after Kalisto to at least get the shot at being, you know, that top brand door, because damn sure is an Alberto Del Rio, let's be honest.
Certainly was not Alberto Del Rio, and apparently, you know, he's gone, obviously, so they missed the boat now twice with him, and, you know, I'm sure he will go on and be the guy that you expect, as he's been when he's been away from WWE. But now moving on to that second match, Kota Ibushi and TJ Perkins, of course, TJP and Evolve and the former Suicide Manic and TNA and everything else that he's been in. Guy, his history much publicized, obviously, that's one of the guys that really got to tell his story throughout the Cruiserweight Classic, honestly. So they have him here against Ibushi. What a fantastic match this was. Again, Ibushi just delivering throughout this entire tournament. I got to name him an MVP immediately right now after this showcase that you had. Just, man, they went and did everything here. Like, you got the moonsault to the outside. You got the moonsault kick. You got TJP doing all his crazy stuff. Constant going to the knee bar. I think that's about, he used the knee bar about three times in the match, and then at the last part, he was able to get a bend his neck all the way back, which had been worked on in that Brian Kendrick match, and get that cross face on him, and TJP goes on to the finals, as I think after a while, people started expecting that TJP was at least getting to the finals, if not win. He does. What'd you think of the match here?
As good as the final was, I think this match was actually that little bit better. And while we had more high-flying in the first match, this one didn't have, I felt, as much high-flying. But TJP, you know, definitely held up his end of the bargain, because everybody would go, you know, Ibushi, Ibushi, Ibushi. For a time, I was too. But I've watched TJP many times, and he's always been great in the ring. So I'll openly admit, I was surprised that Perkins got it, because, like you said, not only do you not get the almost kind of dream figured matchup of Ibushi versus Zack Sabre Jr., not only do you not get that, you don't get either. You don't have either of them in the match now. But I thought, you know, I saw a few people on Facebook complain about the use of the knee bar so much, because I think over the entire night, I think he legitimately used it six times in two matches. So I could see kind of where the where the complaint could be, but at the same time, that's kind of psychology. It's trying to wear down that one limb and, you know, use your move that affects it. And TJ Perkins did that to absolute perfection tonight. So, you know, I would probably agree that it was kind of one of the upsets of the tournament, because they were saying that almost as soon as the match was over. I would agree, but I'm this was that back-to-back great matches here.
Yeah, I mean, and what did you think of the whole people sort of were more about thinking Ibushi than sort of going for TJP here when the match ended? I saw a lot of people kind of getting upset. Oh, typical Full Sail, we're not kind of going with what's happening here. And did you have a problem with that? I mean, I thought, you know, Ibushi, this is the last time you're seeing him. He's had a wonderful, wonderful tournament. I think he should, if anybody deserves a thank you somebody chant, it'd definitely be Ibushi.
Absolutely. Thank you, Kota chant, I think, was well warranted here. As far as, I can't be told, as bad as the crowd can be at Full Sail, I didn't think they were that bad tonight. I could hear some boos when Perkins won, but I think even by the time you got to the final, I think everyone had A, forgotten that, and B, it actually seemed like the majority of the crowd was going for Perkins once we got to the final. There seemed to be a lot more cheers when he got introduced the second time than boos after he won his match, his semifinal match. So, yeah, you kind of come to expect that with the Full Sail crowd. So it was kind of just business as usual and nothing unusual.
Yeah, certainly. And I think, you know, you're going to get that kind of mixed bag with the Full Sail crowd sometimes. But, you know, TJP is a guy that they know from, you know, Evolve and everything. So I would have expected him to get the more cheers as far as when it came to the final. Like I said, I think you're going to get people that love those guys that they know, and Kota Ibushi is a freaking megastar. I mean, you can't really get too upset about the fact that, oh, they're booing a CJP one and they're talking about Kota Ibushi instead of talking about who went on to win and all that stuff. I mean, that's sort of expected. It's going to happen. Just, you know, you gloss over it, don't focus on it too much.
Yeah, I think the way everything ended up being handled in the end, I personally think was fine. I think it was a bit of the shock, the fact that Ibushi didn't win. You know, I don't think it was more, boo, you know, screw you, TJ Perkins, I can't believe they had you go over Ibushi. It was more like, oh man, I can't believe Ibushi lost. You know, he's doing so well. You know, But like I said, I think in the end, everyone's went, all right, well, if this guy, I can't really say kid, because I mean, TJ Perkins, I think, 31, you know, if this guy can be, you know, the great Kota Ibushi, he must be something. And I think part of that also was the fact that, like you said, he's known to Evolve. Let's be honest, he's known for TNA, you know, as Manic and as Suicide. So if you look on his Twitter, he's still, I think, at Mascara Manic, which he openly admitted wasn't his choice. So I think the crowd was more forgiving with the fact that while he did be a Japanese superstar, it was a hometown boy that did it.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, that's the thing, though, too, is you had these guys that went to the final go through the absolute best that the whole tournament provided. So these guys got insta cred when you get to the final. They beat Zack Sabre Jr. and they beat Kota Ibushi. I mean, you couldn't get any more than that. And just, I loved it. This match definitely, you definitely should check out this entire show. It's a very easy 2-hour watch, but this is the best match. Totally agree with Patrick, of the entire show. And, you know, perhaps the entire tournament when you look back at it. I mean, Kota Ibushi, every single match he had was fantastic and almost close to this level, so it's really hard to kind of pick and choose. But, man, really, really a standout thing here with these guys. So if there's one match you certainly need to watch, if for some reason you've only got 20 minutes to take time in, it definitely needs to be this one. And then you get the one match that had nothing to do with Cruiserweight Classic. It was sort of a showcase for four Cruiserweight guys that will be part of that Raw contingent that goes up there. However they're going to do this, I guess we'll find out as time goes on for Monday. But you had Gargano and Ciampa, who are obviously still trying to go for those NXT Tag Team titles. And we apologize, I think on Tuesday when we had Harry on for the SmackDown review, I said it was for the tag titles, and it was not. It's Cedric Alexander and Noam Dar against Gargano and Ciampa. Really, this, I think from the onset, you kind of knew what this was. It was going to be to get Gargano and Ciampa a very good tag win, and you got that here because obviously Gargano and Ciampa have things going on that Dar and Alexander do not right now. But this was just, again, lots of action, hard-hitting stuff, just stuff happening all the time, and it's so much fun to watch. Really good match, and just I thought it was a perfect, like, instead of, you know, you get two singles matches, a very good, like, let's get something different out there to kind of get them waiting for the final that you're going to have.
And the thing about it is, I didn't really read too much into this, but the first I heard about this match was earlier tonight during the show. I think they did maybe between the two semifinal matches with Gargano and Ciampa.
Right.
I think it's how it went. And that was the first that I heard this match even be announced. And I'm like, okay, Dar Alexander, and I've said it before, I don't think Alexander is physically capable of having a bad match. So when you have a guy as good as Alexander teaming with somebody who kind of did make his name known in Noam Dar, and they're facing a team that's already set of, you know, a pair of guys that a lot of people already know are freaking awesome in Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano, you know, even with the fact that this was essentially, if you want to put it in quotation marks, the dead spot match, because you're following the two most important tournament matches, and you're immediately ahead of the most important tournament match in the final, you know, you kind of wonder, what are you going to get as far as a reaction from the crowd, especially also having to follow that incredible Ibushi-Perkins match. This match, I thought, was good. And this was, once again, a very good match. I do think Gargano and Ciampa's tag title match at TakeOver was a better match, but at the same time, I almost wonder, were these guys, and I can't believe I'm saying this, taking it easy, because they kind of knew, it's like, hey, you know, go out, take 15 minutes, do whatever you want, have a little fun, and, you know, just don't get hurt, and just, you know, give the fans there a showcase and something to kind of bring them out of their lull following the two semifinals and kind of still get them warmed up for the final. And I think they suited that one almost absolutely perfectly. I was happy that the actual team didn't pick up the win in Gargano and Ciampa, DIY. And, yeah, they definitely made their presence known that they still want the tag titles. And I'm wondering, is something going to happen in Toronto in November that maybe we get, you know, another tag title match with DIY versus the Revival?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they kind of talked about it on the NXT show previously that they were going to have this, whatever the tag match was at the Cruiserweight Classic final, but their eyes were square on the Revival. So certainly this kind of alludes to them, okay, we had a big win, you know, now the Revival can't really say that we don't deserve it, but let's see if they carry this on NXT or anything. But again, this is a just This was a really good match. I enjoy the crap out of it. And Gargano and Ciampa have been fantastic as a team. I love their tag finish. They got to win with that. And you get them marching on to see what happens with the Revival. And, of course, the final match, if Grand Metal League and TJP, this was, like you said, just a little bit not as great as the Ibushi and TJP match from earlier. Just because, you know, these guys are exhausted by this point, too. Then they've already wrestled one match. It was always going to be hard to try to eclipse that. And they still went out there and had one hell of a match, all things considered. You had two times where Arana going to the outside where TJP kind of awkwardly takes him and Metalik to the outside, and then Metalik does the same thing on another move where he takes both of them to the outside as well. He always does these crazy suicidas too. Go ahead.
Yeah, that one was, I found that one to be absolutely incredible. Yeah, unfortunately, TJP's did look a little awkward. You knew what they were trying to do. It looked awkward, like maybe their timing was off. The one that Grand Metalik did, though, I mean, hurtling the top rope and then still managing to catch TJ and still hit the Hurricanrana, Frankenstein, or whatever you want to call it, you know, to the outside. I was absolutely blown away by that one, just by the fact that he was able to pull that off pretty damn well. We probably should mention, you know, the kind of mega announcement that happened at the beginning of the match, though.
Yeah, let's finish talking about the final, and then we'll leave that for the end here. You have more of this here with TJP going for the knee and going for the knee bar. He does work on the knee a bit more than he did with Ibushi in this match. And then Metalik, I thought, added so much. He only did it once, but it added a whole lot when you get to the actual last part of the finish. Metalik gets up and he can barely... His move is not the Metalik driver. He turns it. He can only do a Michinoku driver because his leg gives out. And he sells the leg really hard. He tries to go up to do a Super Metalik driver. And he can't do it. And TJP counters it into a knee bar again right in the middle. And this time he has to tap out. But it took three times. Metalik had to get to the ropes twice to counter it. Just the third time he couldn't do it. And TJP wins. Man, just I love the fantastic ending and just a great story throughout.
Yeah, absolutely. Like we said, maybe not as flashy as the semifinal matches, but like I said, we have to remember, both of those semifinal matches were about 15 minutes long. And then in that case, TJP had to turn around and essentially go back out there barely, and I mean barely a half hour later from bell to bell. I think, I tried calculating it, I think from the bell to end his match to the bell beginning the finals was under 35 minutes. So he had to do two 15 to 20 minute matches barely a half hour apart, which is, you know, unbelievable that anybody would be able to go ahead and pull it off. You know, usually you have a minimum of an hour to an hour and a half to pull off something like that. But to go turn around and do it in a half hour is almost inhuman. So you can kind of understand why this wouldn't be as, you know, flashy and everything. And then TJP also kept mainly to the ground and then was definitely focusing on Grand Metalik's knee a bit more. He knew what he wanted to do, and I'm almost interested to see how this is going to play into the future, because when you think cruiserweight, you kind of think, you know, high-flying, showmanship and things like that. And when you have a guy focusing on you know, his opponent's knees all the time, because, I mean, both matches ended via the knee bar tonight. And I believe, In his first three matches, he won two of them via the knee bar. So that's 4 out of 5 wins coming via submission. So, you know, I'm interested to see how that's going to play out in the future once we talk about the other, you know, pretty damn important thing. But, yeah, I'm so happy for T.J. Perkins. You know, an 18-year career, and like I said, he's in his early 30s, and he's had an 18-year career already. And just with everything that he's had to deal with how, you know, TNA finished up with him, and just everything that he's gone through over the years, you know, to finally get that vindication at the end to win, you know, probably the most important cruiserweight tournament in years. If not ever.
I mean, certainly because you know, they New Japan had the Super J Cup, and that was nowhere near as good as what this was. So, you know, for me, I think this is certainly a fantastic tournament. And, you know, the fact that they want to make it a yearly thing is pretty awesome. Now, you know, they're talking about the women's tournament. They haven't officially confirmed the tag tournament is back, but that's supposed to be coming, as you know, again, just like they did last week or last year. So, I mean, I'm all in favor of these tournaments that they're going to be like this every time, because this was fantastic. And of course, the thing that they surprised us with, which ultimately was a very big surprise, because we haven't speculated about it. People have kind of said, how awesome would it be if they did this? But it was never outright said by anybody, okay, this is happening. And so when you do have Triple H come out before the match starts, like right before they're going to ring the bell, his music hits, he comes out. Yep. They also announce him with his official title, even though he's still called Triple H there. He unveils, saying that there's not only going to be a cruiserweight tournament champion, there's going to be a WWE cruiserweight champion, and then shows off the title as a purple background to go with the colors of the CWC. It looks really
in
pretty.
Before the complaints.
Go ahead.
Sorry. No, I'm just saying, let's get our stuff in before everyone starts complaining about the belt. Even though
I like the look of the belt. I'm looking at it really up close, at least the metal on the front, and it looks awesome. I mean, you know, I know not everybody likes purple, but it's the color of the CWC. It's been the color of that tournament the entire time, and you know, for me, I like the way it looks. What do you think?
I love the plates. I know the picture you're talking about, and I took a good, you know, long look at it. I love the plates. I can see where the problems would arise with the strap itself, because I don't know if it's just because it looks kind of plain, it almost looks like there's nothing on it or what. It's just, I can see where the strap would cause issues.
I can see that too, but also we got to remember this is another title for WWE. I mean, they don't want to make it look as gaudy as the world title either, you know.
I mean, you think about it. When was the last time we had have we ever had 9 championships in the company?
I don't think so. I mean, maybe during the Alliance, because they had the cruiserweight and the light heavyweight.
Yeah, that would be the combination of the WCW and WWE titles.
Right. They might have had 10 at that point. But yeah, they only had one women's title at that point, so I guess you'd still have 9.
And only, well, they eventually ended up with 2 tag belts. But, I mean, looking at right now, you've got the World Champion, the World, or the WWE tag, SmackDown tag, all women's, SmackDown Women's, IC US, and now the Cruiserweight. So is that 9 or is that actually 10?
Well, you got 2 of every of the other titles. That's 9.
Yeah, so I do like that it's not as flashy. I think the plates look absolutely fantastic on it. I could see where the issues would arise with the strap because it does look a little plain, but I've got no issues with the new title belt.
I mean, so you basically have a new champion going into Raw on Monday. Do you think that they set up a tournament? I don't think they would set up a tournament again after you just had him go through a tournament. So I'm going to guess maybe a four-way or five-way or something to crown a contender? Or what do you, or do you think they just have somebody step up and be the – just have a challenger immediately?
With the fact that – I'm trying to think. So Raw this upcoming Monday, that would be the go home show to Clash of Champions, right?
Right. So you'd assume that they would have some kind of. Well, they would have to crown a contender because they would probably have a Cruiserweight Championship match since it is Clash of Champions at that show.
And I would almost feel what better way than to have TJP come out with the belt. And they announce a number one contenders match. I think Fatal 4-Way. And you do Gargano, Ciampa, Dar, and LJ.
They could also do multiple matches, since it is like the first time you're seeing them, so they could do it to kind of showcase them, to get more guys on the show.
That is true, but I almost wouldn't want to overload it right away.
Right, I would agree too. I'm cool with one match, but I could see them going either way. It should be interesting how they decide to do that because they've also got, you know, again, it's a go-home show to that pay-per-view, so they've got other things going on. But this is where, you know, you get to test the 3 hours and see how you do this. But, yeah, I mean, it's been the end of this tournament. Man, sad to see it go because it's been a fantastic 10 weeks or 11 weeks, however long it's been. And they set the standard now. So they have a tournament that's less than this going forward. People are going to be looking at it like, well, it wasn't as good as the Cruiserweight Classic.
Yeah, they've this entire tournament has definitely set the bar very, very high for future tournaments that they may have. I almost wouldn't mind, I don't think they would do it this way, but if you're going to have multiple tournaments, a tag tournament, a women's tournament, a cruiserweight tournament, I almost feel like you would be okay if you did 10 weeks on, 4 weeks off, 10 weeks on, 4 weeks off, 10 weeks on, 4 weeks off. So you do the cruiserweight, wait a month, do the tag, wait a month, do the women's, wait a month, do whatever. And that would roughly round out to about 52 weeks.
Right.
Or it would be 42 weeks. So, you know, maybe you do 2 months in between. 10 weeks on, 8 off, 10 on, 8 off, 10 on, 8 off. You know, to kind of cool down from the last one and start up the next one. You know, and then 2.5 months for that tournament and just keep going like that. I wouldn't mind if they did something like that, if they did it with yearly tournaments. I would like to know what their next one is going to be. Is it going to be, you know, the Dusty Classic or the second annual Dusty Classic, or are they going to do a women's tournament? And, you know, and I'm interested to see what the future is going to hold for future tournaments, because it seems like, you know, they kind of, it seems like the WWE does, but truly does want to switch gears for the future and become a more match-based and more wrestling-based company. You know, you still have to have the storylines, but I think this could set one hell of a standard for the future.
It certainly does. I think, you know, the issue is, too, now that you've sort of laid the groundwork and all these other companies have seen what you're doing, where the only guys that haven't signed are because they're big enough to say, no, we don't want to do it and we'd rather do something else. I mean, yeah, a lot of these guys are from Evolve, so WWE has the in with them. But, I mean, if you're CMLL or you're Dragon Gate or you're one of these other kind of promotions that's not New Japan or AAA that has sort of all the guys under contract already, or I mean, Lucha Underground tied in with that as well, or TNA or ROH. I mean, beware if you send your talent, because they may not come back. And are they going to be okay with you going if they know you're probably not coming back?
They may not have a choice but to be okay with it. I mean, you know, my home company, AAW, they lost Cedric Alexander, Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa, all through the Cruiserweight Classic, you know. But the fans and everything were okay with that, because we know that it's on to bigger and better things. And I think Evolves and AIW are okay with that, particularly with Gargano as well. So companies, you know, they just have to swallow that pill and take the risk, you know, and hopefully, you know, they'll get some wrestlers that are going to be like Zack Sabre Jr. or Kota Ibushi that are like, I'm having more fun doing this. So I'd rather not go yet. I think in Zack Sabre Jr.'s case, it's I'll not go yet.
Right.
And because I think by this time next year, he'll be there. And I think it's just a matter of when.
I agree with you. I think he's just kind of, he's got some things he wants to do still, and then he'll make that call. I think also what happens this January with some of the contracts that are coming up, you know, this December, this January, who goes there and who doesn't may also affect who else comes along. You know, we still got, you know, Ricochet decided not to sign with Lucha Underground, so you probably know where he's going at some point next year as well. And, yep, you know, all the ROH contracts that are coming up pretty quick here. So I think if NXT is able to restock as WWE is expecting that they can, you know, that may make people go, oh man, they seem kind of full, maybe I'll wait. Or maybe WWE goes after some of these guys a little bit harder because they didn't get who they wanted from ROH or from whoever. So that should be pretty interesting to watch as this year comes closer to an end. Anything else you want to say about the tournament or today or tonight's finals or anything else before we close out here?
I did like that they waited until like the last moments before the final to announce that it was going to be for the Cruiserweight Championship. And seriously, congrats to TJP, TJ Perkins, on becoming the winner of the first ever Cruiserweight Classic and the inaugural WWE Cruiserweight Champion.
Yeah, certainly. That's going to be pretty awesome again to see how they deal with them on this upcoming Monday. And yeah, and that's kind of what they led you into. Now it's supposedly in good hands. Let's see how they are, what great hands are ready for them when they go to Raw, Clash of Champions, and the Raw after that as well. But yeah, I mean, that's going to do it for us here on this Wrestling to the Max Extra. Of course, you can listen to Patrick and Harry on Wrestling Unwrapped most Sundays, except for Sundays when we have pay-per-views for right now. Perhaps that changes into more of a thing every weekend, but hey, at least we got them for 2 weeks out of the month, so that's great, because these guys put on a fantastic show every time they do one. And, of course, you can listen to them on the WWE Network or, you know, wherever the WWE Network is available, or just Wrestling Around wherever that is available, which is iTunes, everywhere. Everywhere you have podcasts, they are pretty much there. And, of course, we have our regular Wrestling to the Max show on Thursday night, Friday morning. We'll be previewing some destruction, the first destruction show for New Japan as they get back into things, TNA after the Destruction Decay show, and of course talking more about what happened on NXT, and of course Gary and Paul will get to give their thoughts on the Cruiserweight Classic as well, that I just talked about here with Patrick. And I just wanted to get something out here for you guys. Thank you, Patrick, so much for joining me here.
No problem. Glad to do it, Sean, as always.
And, of course, yeah, WTMNet.com as well. Go check that out. We have more wrestling stuff. Hopefully I'll get a written review out there pretty quick tomorrow or later tonight. And, yeah, until the next day, we'll see you again. Later, folks.
See you guys.
The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.